There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Indeed, we are second week of The Grill, live from its new summer home, its new summer environment. Chris McCarty on the ones and twos last week. Tom Urquhart back here with you this week. And we're live from Kicker Sports Bar, live here at Dubai Sports City, your home of the ICC Cricket World Cup. A home from home for the ICC. It's literally in, you could probably hit a six from here into the ICC main boardroom as it's based down here at Dubai Sports City. So what have we got covered for you between now and 6 o'clock this evening? Live updates from the world of the ICC Cricket World Cup. Not one, but two games to look forward to this afternoon. The FIFA Women's World Cup is underway. Some big games to look forward to a little later on, and the start of the Copa America, plus not ignoring all of the intrigue, the debate, and of course the rumours doing the rounds in the transfer market at the moment. Last weekend, before the playoffs in Super Rugby, and a big clash over in France later on this evening, top 14 playoff final for the top 14 title. US Open moves into its third round, intriguing settlements there, plus it's been a big week for US sport, and we got you well covered with one of the best between now and the end of play. As always, if you'd like to have your say, number of ways for you to do that, text me now on 4001. Have your say online at Dubai Eye Sports or at Dubai Eye 1038 FM. Best still though, make your way down here, mosey on down to Dubai Sports City and come and join us at Kicker Sports Park.
You're listening to The Grill. Join the conversation.
Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye 103.8 app.
I think it is an afternoon of firsts. Obviously, the opening team, the opening batsman from last weekend, didn't make the cut for this week. They've all been dropped to the subs bench. So we've got four of us, I assume, that are all making their debut down here at Kickers for The Grill, our new home for the summer months. Monty, alongside me. You weren't here last week, were you?
No, I was here last week.
You happy with the new environment?
Very nice, fantastic venue. Yeah? Yes, indeed.
Okay, yeah, so fantastic. you're well catered. We've got Monty on site to keep us up to date with all of the intrigue. Give us his thoughts on the world of cricket and, of course, football and much, much more. Archie, off the bench, I think this is your first as well.
First time at Kickers, and it's a wonderful venue. We've got inside football pitches with plenty of activity just behind you, Tom, and then behind us, plenty of big screens down here if you want to catch some of the ICC Cricket World Cup, which is featuring strongly on the big screens. And then outside, it's some wonderful football fields as well. So, yeah, if you're a sports fan and you're in this neck of the woods, it is the place to come to. Kickers Bar down here at Dubai Sports City.
Yeah, come on down and say hi to us. It will pay to come on down today as well. Why? Because we've got a rather special ICC Cricket World Cup competition that we're running throughout the show. Details of that to follow in just a few moments' time. So I'm making my debut. Monty's making his debut. Arch is making his debut. There's a double debut for Arch because he's not even been down here for a plate of chicken wings. This is his very first time through the door. Surely you've come down here for a plate of chicken wings.
Yeah, shockingly, I've been in this establishment before, Tom and friends. How's everyone doing? Hope you're having a good weekend out there, Dubai listeners. Get down here to Kicker Sports Bar and Grill. Very, very fun place. They do have phenomenal chicken wings. I actually have tasted them myself, so get on down here and join us. We'll be here till 6 p.m.
Ross Chris with us all the way through till 6, and he's got his work cut out. It's been a busy old week for Roscoe, with some amazing stories coming to conclusion over this. I mean, we'll talk about it in more detail a little later on, Christo, but, you know, not one but two sort of fairy tale endings to two of the biggest tournaments in the world.
If you love sports stories, you need to turn your attention to the USA this week, because it's just phenomenal stories. Getting to hoist the Stanley Cup for the very first time, St. Louis, I mean, that 50 years, a drought like that, and they get to bring it home for their fans. Very, very good. And then all of Canada coming behind the Toronto Raptors. I mean, it was almost a David versus Goliath type of matchup on paper coming into the finals, and then Kawhi Leonard gets it done. Game 6, first championship ever for the Raptors. Boy, they really, really look good out there. Great, great week of sport back home.
Going to dive into those, as I said, in much more detail a little later on in proceedings. We've had the FIFA Women's World Cup as well. I mean, you know, I'm one of these ones at the moment because I understand the growth of women's sport the world over, and I completely embrace that. I completely understand that. Will I sit through 90 minutes of watching it? I have been over the last couple of weeks, that's for sure. Some great games.
I watched the game last night, England versus Argentina, where England actually are through the round of 16. I mean, if you actually watch that game, it's phenomenal the way they play. They play the whole 90 minutes. The save that the goalkeeper made yesterday, the Argentinian goalkeeper one-on-one situation was fantastic. England's play was very good under the new coach, Phil Neville, and I think England will go a long way in this World Cup.
Some extraordinary scorelines as well, none more so than the USA.
You have to feel for Thailand.
We've got to feel for Thailand, but you've also got to be asked a question, haven't you? If this is the elite of the elite, this is the best of the best, this is the best 16 teams in the world, surely you shouldn't be beating one of the teams that is ranked in the top 16 in the world by 13 goals.
Exactly, and the Thailand keeper. Whatever she put in her coffee that morning, it just wasn't working for her. I felt so bad for 3-0 at halftime. Then they come out and they belt 10 more goals. And USA took a little bit of heat in that because they're celebrating quite hard out towards the end there. And, you know, they might be just for some criticism there.
Roscoe, whatever happened to this whole American philosophy of running up the score? Because that just seems what happened, right?
Well, that's
give your bench a run, give a few players position changes. They run up the score. That is the classic case of running up the score.
I think it comes down to your manager. It comes down to your coach. You know, if the coach says they want you to go out there and perform and keep performing, don't lie down. You got to listen to the person who's putting out the lineup card. So certainly the coach said, keep going for it, ladies. Keep putting the ball in the back of the net.
One of the things I will say about the FIFA Women's World Cup, and we'll talk about this in more detail, we'll talk about the start of the Copa America a little later on, transfer deadline news and more as well. One thing I will say is, I'm just talking to my son about it, he's absolutely transfixed by the whole thing. And that generation really have bought into tournaments like this. And one of the reasons I was discussing it with him, he said, one of the reasons I like it is we're seeing teams like Canada, teams like New Zealand that he doesn't or hasn't really had the opportunity to see in the Men's World Cup at this level, and he likes to see that sort of variety out there. I had to then try to explain him about the extraordinary records that the New Zealand men's team hold in World Cup history at the moment. Did I get this one right? Yet to be defeated?
No, we've been defeated before, don't worry about that. But 2010 World Cup, we were the only undefeated team. Three draws. Then robbed of going any further. But yeah, that's what we took.
We'll leave it at that, shall we? Obviously, one of the big talkers throughout the week has been, what is one of our main focuses down here, the ICC Cricket World Cup. If you're looking for somewhere to watch the Cricket World Cup, I know there are venues around town that are offering all sorts of deals and options for you to view. I can't really highly recommend this venue down here. Why? Because you have got wall-to-wall screens, big, little, and otherwise, no shortage of seating inside and out, and some amazing food and beverage deals specific to the Cricket World Cup. So make your way down here to Cricket and try it out for yourself. Let's talk Cricket World Cup. Obviously, we've got two games ongoing at the moment. Mark Archer, the rain.
The rain, yes. I guess we've been underway for 2 weeks now, and I guess the couple of talking points, rain, English weather, sticky bales has been an issue as well. And we have had some good cricket when the sun has come out and shined. But it's unfortunate. I know there's been lots of talk about why are we playing this format of cricket in terms of why are we playing in England in June? Why are we playing 10 teams? Why are there no reserve days? I guess you can argue backwards and forwards, again, the rights and wrongs of it. But it is cricket. It does rain. We've lost a few matches. It's unfortunate. But I still feel it's the best format with 10 teams in it. And I think it's the top four teams will prevail. And look, me and Monty were talking, New Zealand played India, to play India a day or two ago, rained out. It was a shame because it would have been a really good match. New Zealand actually gave India a bit of a hiding in a warm-up match. Two teams quite well balanced. If the conditions favour New Zealand, if it is overcast and the ball's swinging, they've got the perfect bowlers to exploit it and would have been a threat to India. But at the end of the day, we're both actually happy with the point because I think we've worked out how many points are going to take to get through, and a point for India and a point for New Zealand, where it possibly would have got none for either team, is not a bad thing. And it's going to be a shame that the results at some stage are going to get a little bit skewed, because if you get one of the stronger teams against a weaker team and it's a rained off game, it's almost 2 points lost. So it's going to be seeing how it all comes out in the wash. But look, you can't legislate for the rain. It does rain in the UK.
You can to a certain degree, because as you said, it's the United Kingdom, it's England and Wales. It's during June, so obviously the summer has started, but tradition would say that you're going to have a problem with the weather at some point. We've had it four times now, four games now being rained off. We've had Duckworth Lewis called upon in a couple of other games as well, and lost overs. Why, and today is obviously very different, Monty, but the thing that surprised me is that why there aren't more games with multiple, days with multiple games on. The majority of days seem to have one single game.
The problem is, logistically, it's a nightmare to organize another game the next day. As already the ICC came out, Mark Richardson the other day, and said that logistically it's difficult for them to accommodate games. Now you can understand that, because obviously the format is such where you have to play 48 games in 45 days, and in order to have another game scheduled, if the game is rained out, to have another game scheduled the next day is difficult for the players, because the players have to move on to the next game, and fatigue factor plays an important role, plus also for the team management. You know, I mean, so it's ICC cannot really do anything. But obviously, if it would never have rained, this would have been one of the best World Cups ever, because each team is playing each one, and the one who goes on to lift the trophy would say that yes, we've been there by beating everyone.
And yeah. It will be a shame, because there are some massive matches to come. We've had a couple of matches rained off, but none bigger than the match tomorrow at Old Trafford in Manchester. It's a game that stops billions of people around the world, India, Pakistan, and Monty showed me a forecast saying looks like the weather might not behave, but let's hope they get 100 overs in tomorrow, and that's the match that stops nations, really. And it'll be a shame if that type of cricket match, because those two teams play so little, only really in ICC tournaments, it'd be a massive blow to the organisers and that match doesn't
happen. Therefore, would it not pay to have more doubleheaders like we're seeing today? Two games scheduled today, which is a rarity in the scheduling at the moment, which would then therefore free up a couple of possible reserve days. I get the whole sort of idea about recovery and logistics, but it's not like they're travelling, you know, from Melbourne over to Perth or something like that, and it takes them 4.5 weeks. It's in England and Wales. There's a very short difference between the grounds.
The problem is, if you start having double headers and it rains, then you're losing two games instead of one. So the whole theory, then you've got two games that have to be either reserve day. It just doesn't work. We can't have a 4-month World Cup. It's a 6-week event at best, and that's even tight to get in. So it's unfortunate.
But if you've got that 6 weeks to play with, and you are doing, and I'm, you know, dare I say, I'm in shooting distance from the ICC at the moment, so I don't want to start talking about broadcast rights or anything. But broadcast rights obviously do play a part in an event like this. And therefore, if you've got two games on one day, the old cynic out there might say, ooh, yeah, but that's a splitting of broadcast rights, isn't it? If you've got a choice of one game or another, which game are you going to watch? If you've got one game, that's it. That's all you're going to watch throughout the day. And the broadcast rights are that much more valuable. Again, don't know if there's any rhyme to that reason.
You've answered your own question.
I think most of the games which are a doubleheader are on a Saturday. And I think the only reason why ICC did that was because it's a weekend for many people around the globe, like in India, Pakistan, where they watch cricket. It's an off day, so people would be able to sit at home and watch both the games, most probably, until the wee hours. So maybe that's one of the reasons.
It's interesting to note, I haven't looked at the draw, but I'm pretty sure that India won't be playing on any of those double-header days. I'm pretty sure that the focus of tomorrow will be India-Pakistan.
They didn't play for the first 2 weeks anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So, look, again, the weather's been disappointing, but I think when all evens out in the wash, and I think the best four teams will come through and prevail. And then hopefully the weather's improved in July, and we'll get some finals cricket in.
And of course, we've got an Ashes series straight after that as well. So no shortage of cricket if you're a fan of it. ICC Cricket World Cup is the focus of much of our attention. In just a few minutes' time, we'll come back with some live scores and also give you today's question for an opportunity of a lifetime. How do you like to be at the ICC Cricket World Cup? We'll tell you how next.
This is The Grill, live from Kickers Sports Bar, where the game is always on.
Indeed we are. We're live down here at Kickers. Where is Kickers? Down at Dubai Sport City. Get yourself down here to be part of the ICC Cricket World Cup atmosphere. Some great drinks and food deals to be had down here at Kickers, so make sure you come on down here. If Kickers is your thing, Kickers is your venue. Get yourself down here and be part of that. We're on air until 6 o'clock. We'll be here throughout the entire summer as well, so make sure you come and join us. Let's get over to the cricket. Mark Archer's keeping an eye for us.
Yeah, first of two matches today in the ICC Cricket World Cup. It's at the Oval in South London. Sri Lanka are taking on Australia. If Australia win today, they will go to 8 points, which will take them top of the table. Sri Lanka have won the toss. They have elected to bowl first. Australia have made good progress, 136 for 2 after 28 of their 50 overs. Leading the way is their captain and opening batsman, Aaron Finch, is 77 not out off 83 deliveries. 8 fours and 1 6 for the opening batsman. He's just been joined by Steve Smith, who's on 17 after 18 deliveries. Last man dismissed was Usman Khawaja. Court Udana bowled De Silva for 10. So Australia batting first, 142 for 2 now, off 28 of their overs. The second match is down in Cardiff in Wales, where South Africa, who are struggling, I think they're almost bottom of the table on 1 point, will take on Afghanistan. They'll hope to get their first win of the tournament in that match starting a bit later this afternoon, Tom.
We'll keep an eye on the cricket for you. The game that at the moment is being played out has been played out at the Oval. Certainly one of my favourite grounds in the world. One of yours?
Yeah, I like the Oval. I prefer Lords as venues, but cricket, it's a great ground to get access to. It's easy to get to in London, and I like it. Big open field, isn't it? And you've got the iconic gas cylinder sort of things in the background there. And
yeah, the holders, the gas holders.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they are these days, but they're there. And they've done a lot of, they've modernised the ground a lot. The members' pavilion's still the same, but there's a massive new stand at one end, isn't there? The southern end, I think, of the Oval. And it's a great venue to watch cricket.
No, I love it. I love it to bits. It's a great ground for anyone that's over in London. Get an opportunity to have a look. Obviously, go to the home of cricket, without a doubt. That's north of the river. But if you dare go south of the river, come on down to the Oval and have a little look at it. One thing I think they do very well at the Oval is events as well, because they know how to sort of host an ICC Cricket World Cup. They know how to host T20 tournaments. The NatWest 20 T20 Blast has played a lot down there. And they do a lot of other events down there, concerts, Aussie Rules, they play a couple of games down there as well.
I think they played baseball there before as well. So yeah, it's a massive playing surface. Lords is a funny playing surface because it's quite long and you've got the slope there across the Oval, so it's very unique in its own way. But the Oval's a massive, massive playing surface. Usually a very good flat batting wicket there, so it's a high scoring ground, and it's a great place to view it, and easy access and off the tube there as well.
Great history at the Oval. In fact, let's dive into a little of that history. The Oval is one of the feature grounds at this year's ICC Cricket World Cup. It's where Australia are taking on Sri Lanka as we speak, and it's been there for many years.
We've been here since 1845. The Ashes were created here. England football internationals, England rugby internationals. You look at this place and it is a genuine global sporting mecca.
It's a great place to get it up and running. Obviously a massive summer. Home World Cup, and what a place to get things off and running. It's my home ground, obviously, playing at Surrey. Location, vibe, it's the full package.
It's only right that the World Cup should come here. Lords, quite right, will get the final match, but we were very pleased to be hosting the opening match.
The first ever Test match in England took place here in 1880. All the greatest players in modern cricket have played at this ground. The famous gas holders that overlook us were built in 1852, and so the gas holders will overlook the Cricket World Cup, will have overlooked everyone from W.G. Grace through Jack Hobbs to the 1970s and 1980s, when this was a home from home for the great West Indian team that dominated that period of cricket. 2005, obviously very memorable to all English and Australians, when England won the Ashes for the first time here in 19 years. And then obviously last year in 2018, Sir Alastair Cook playing his final Test match, scoring 100 and getting one of the most extraordinary ovations that I think anyone has ever seen, and one of those sporting occasions where many more people will claim to have been here than were actually here on the day in times to come.
Just evening games, people pop down after work, and it's a nice little hum for the first innings, but back end of that second innings and the party's getting started, and it's a great ground to play cricket at.
When we hosted the Champions Trophy here in 2017, the India-Pakistan final was incredible. And what I took away from that game was actually the great relationships between the supporters. They got on so well. Sadly, it wasn't a great day for Indian supporters, but as they left the ground, they were providing tickets to the Pakistani supporters outside the ground to come in for the last few overs. And I just thought that was a wonderful example of sportsmanship.
Certainly in England, the phrase cricket ground, I think, has a certain meaning to it, and we absolutely prefer to refer to ourselves as a cricket ground. We like people to be able to walk around the ground and experience the ground to its fullest. Visiting fans here can expect unbelievably good quality pitches. We really want to make sure the world-class players who are playing the Cricket World Cup can express themselves and express their skills to their greatest extent.
With the quality of players that we've got on show, it's going to be an amazing festival.
Good point being made at the end there as well. Quality of players on show. We've got a couple of weeks now into the ICC Cricket World Cup, Monty. We were promised the best players in the world, yet we know we've seen a few bow out as a result of injury, but seen real entertainers, some real people taking advantage of this opportunity to shine.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to see Joe Root, he's currently topping the batting charts. Mohammad Amir was spoken about before the World Cup, as to whether he was suitable or fit enough to play for Pakistan, but he's right now leading the wicket taking. He's the highest wicket taker in the World Cup. The quality has been amazing. Shame on the four games that were washed out. I'm really seeing Chris Gayle to fire for the West Indies. He hasn't done that yet. India, shame that Shikhar Dhawan is out. He got a fantastic 100 against Australia. And I think even Virat Kohli is due for some big runs, and we still have a lot of games, so we will see the best of a lot of players still. So we're still in just a quarter of the World Cup is over, so we have a lot of games, and we see better quality and performances coming up in the World Cup.
Can we talk injuries, Arch? Because obviously we had a couple before the tournament. Dale Steyn picking up an injury, which has since seen him have to pull out completely from this tournament. And as it goes on as well, more and more being reported at the moment. We saw Andre Russell suffering yesterday. In fact, there were a number of players suffering yesterday at that England-West Indies game. But Andre Russell has complained about his knee problems throughout. It'd be awful to see him go because he's such a great entertainer. And then yesterday we saw him sort of pull out of a big six as well with a wrist injury. So I suppose this is one thing that the team managers must consider moving forward.
Teams that will do well in the World Cup won't just be the best 11. They'll probably have 13, 14, 15 players all contribute. I think England had a couple of injuries yesterday. Jason Roy had
hamstring.
Some hamstring, so he didn't open the innings, which allowed Joe Root to open the innings and get 100.
Owen Morgan
had problems. Josh Butler had problems a couple of days ago. So, yeah, it's going to be a factor, isn't it? And I think the teams with a bit more depth will actually be there or thereabouts in the end. And then you fancy the likes of India, who have a strong squad. England have a strong squad. Australia, you think, whilst they haven't quite got their best 11, I don't think yet, for Australia, they've got depth to come into it. And there's a few teams that probably can't afford to lose a couple of players. New Zealand probably can't afford to lose like Kane Williamson and the like. So, yeah, the depth of the teams will be tested throughout the event. There's a lot of matches to play, so a bit of squad rotation from now and again once teams have sort of think they've got enough points in the bag or need to really push for a win. And the South Africans have had a couple of casualties as well. I think they've lost two players now from their tournament, so it will be a factor. But I guess it's going to test who's got the best 15.
Key thoughts coming in on the ICC Cricket World Cup. We're watching it down here live from Kickers Sports Bar in the heart of Dubai Sports City. It's a wonderful venue to watch cricket, but I'm pretty sure that all four of us around the table, and probably everyone out there listening in at the moment, would rather be there in England or, of course, Wales to watch this year's Cricket World Cup. Well, guess what? We are giving you the opportunity to do exactly that. All the team at Dubai I-103 8FM have teamed up with our partners and, of course, our host venue Kickers to give you this opportunity. What are we going to give you? Two flights to Manchester, two nights accommodation for two people in Manchester, plus you get tickets to Australia against South Africa at Old Trafford on July the 6th. Now, Ross Chris has already thrown his hat into the ring. If you need a travelling partner at the moment, because you're quite happy to take on sporting experiences the world over, aren't you?
Yeah, it sounds like a phenomenal little thing that we got set up here. So if anyone at home wins this one, hit me up on Instagram, Ross Talks. I'll come and sit next to you on the flight and enjoy the cricket.
Two flights to Manchester, two nights accommodation, Australia against South Africa. It's going to be a great game anyway.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Australia, South Africa. I mean, South Africa are in need of points, and you never know, that could be a game where if South Africa have a good run until the end, they would be looking for the top four. And Australia, they might have already made the top four, but you never know how the it depends on the weather and how competitive the games are.
Even if there isn't anything on that game, two great old foes who will be going hammer and tong against each other, and Old Trafford as well, another great monument to world cricket around the globe.
Yeah, great venue, and if you're a football fan, you can pop up the road about a kilometre and you can go to Old Trafford and see go into the Manchester United Superstore and do some shopping with some new names on the back of those shirts for the season. But yeah, it's great. It's a great city, Manchester, to go watch sport as well. It's a really fun place, and Old Trafford, where they have the cricket venue, the cricket ground, and the football pitch in the football ground for Manchester United is a nice part of Manchester to go and have spend some time. But that's a good match. South Africa have been disappointing and awful, really, and they are going to struggle now. They're going to pretty much have to win every match going through now to get the 11 points. Me and Monty worked out you're probably going to need 11 points to get through the top four. They're on 1 point after four matches, so they're struggling. So they've got to find some wins and some wins quickly. So they might have a must-win match against Australia, which will put more emphasis on that game. But no love lost between those two proud sporting nations.
Got a bit of history, haven't they?
Yeah, when Australia take on South Africa.
Bit of World Cup history as well.
Yes, indeed. So that will be a fascinating match. Last time they locked horns in the UK in 1999, we all know what happens. three balls remaining, and South Africa had the game in the bag, and then Lance Klusener and Alan Donald had a run-out issue. So, and Australia went on and clinched the trophy at Lord's against Pakistan. So that will be a big match. Again, probably a must-win for the South Africans at that stage, and Australia probably done enough to get through to the finals.
Yeah. So just a quick reminder of what you're going to get. Two flights to Manchester, that's on us. Two nights accommodation for two people in Manchester, again, on us. You've got tickets to go and see Australia against South Africa, two of them. It's going to be live at Old Trafford on July the 6th. What must you do? Well, you must be listening to, obviously, The Grill, but also off script each weekday between 5 and 8. You must also be able to travel on July the 6th, and you must have a valid visa to travel. We can't be responsible for that. You've got to get yourself the visa and be available to travel, and we will do the rest to make your ICC Cricket World Cup dreams come true. So, what will happen? Well, over the course of the next couple of weeks, we've got one winner already. Nick, who was last week's winner, he's gone in the hat to compete. Now we're going to draw another winner today here from The Grill, who will then get the opportunity to go head-to-head with another winner from next week. So three winners coming down to The Grill, live down here at Kickers, this time next week. One of those three will go through, and we'll be making, of course, that appearance over in Manchester on July the 6th. In order for you to win the competition today and get one step closer to that dream trip to the ICC Cricket World Cup, listen carefully. This is a tournament that is, well, it has so much history that runs through the number of tournaments that have been played around the world. So many fairy tale stories, so many great legends of the game. There have been former winners. Australia, I think, are the most.
Yeah, Australia won the most, I think,
five times. India won it twice.
South Africa yet to win it.
Yes. Okay. And West Indies have won it, what,
three times?
Three times, I think.
The beginning.
Sri Lanka,
first,
of course.
Two.
Sri Lanka won it
once. Famous one, wasn't it? Anyway, we have got to give to you now the. Well, we're going to give not the identity, but we are going to play a little clip of a former Cricket World Cup winning captain. Another extraordinary story that unfolded in cricket folk history and lore. And all we need you to do is identify this Cricket World Cup winning captain. If you can identify the captain, please send that name and yours to 40001 now for your chance to be drawn out of the hat at the end of the show. So who is this former World Cup winner?
Yes, that's the motto recently, and they've done a great job. You know, they've played like tigers, especially the younger boys. You know, they haven't been overawed by any situation, and if they play like tigers, I don't mind if they win or lose today.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Kickers Sports Bar, where the game is always on.
Yeah, we're live down here at the moment. Quick reminder of today's competition. We're asking you to identify this former cricket captain, former Cricket World Cup winner. He is a man who has raised this famous trophy in the past. You need to identify who it is and then send that name and your name to 4001.
Yes, that's the motto recently, and they've done a great job. You know, they've played like tigers, especially the younger boys. You know, they haven't been overawed by any situation. And if they play like tigers, I don't mind if they win or lose today.
So a former national captain, a former winner of the Cricket World Cup. He's not done a huge amount since retiring from cricket.
He's kind of disappeared into...
Yeah, he's gone be quite quiet.
Retirement,
really.
Hasn't he?
Yeah, just quiet retirement, really. Put his feet up. So he is who we are looking for. If you know the identity of that person, text the name, please, along with your name to 4001. You could be one closer to flying off to Manchester to watch Australia against South Africa at Old Trafford on July the 6th. All expenses paid trip, courtesy of The Grill, courtesy of Dubai Eye 103.8, and courtesy of Kickers as well. So if you know the answer, text it now to us on 4001. Let's get a quick update from the cricket. Mark Archer.
Yeah, first of two matches today in the ICC World Cup. The later match is in Cardiff, which is South Africa taking on Afghanistan. Early match today starting is at the Oval, South London. Sri Lanka taking on Australia. And the Aussies are going well. Aaron Finch has just brought up 100. He is 101 not out of only 97 deliveries. four sixes and eight boundary fours in his knock of 101, a captain's knock by Aaron Finch. It means that Australia 182 for two after 32.2 of their 50 overs. They're going to go on and get a big score here. I would say all up around maybe 350 is going to be threatened plus if they can stay together a bit longer. So Australia in the driving position here, 182 for two after 32 of their 50 overs. Aaron Finch, 101 not out.
So I was watching the game at the Rose Bowl. It's not the Rose Bowl anymore, is it? It's Southampton now, I think. Is it still the Rose Bowl or not?
Hampshire Bowl,
The Hampshire Bowl or something like that, isn't it?
It's in Hampshire.
Anyway, they were talking about the longest boundaries in the tournament. I'm just trying to compare that to the Oval, because I always remember that the Oval to be quite long boundaries as well, don't they?
Yeah, but the problem with the Oval is you've got so many strips. Look how many cricket wet strips across it, almost so across the whole outfield. So depending on where the strip is, you may get a very short boundary. And the short boundary you usually get the Oval is by the pavilion. You see the players come down the pavilion. It's a third mound boundary that's probably only 50, 60 yards. But depends on where the pitch is cut within the strip, which means if it's right in the middle, it's big boundaries. But they seem to have brought the boundaries in quite a lot for the World Cup so far. So there's a lot of sort of 60 to 70 metre boundaries. So it's a batsman's game these days, Tom. It's not a great era to be a bowler in.
Right, keep your thoughts coming in, 4001. Text them to us now. And, of course, those entries into the competition if you want to fly off to Manchester and be part of the ICC Cricket World Cup. In the meantime, though, I'm going to hand over to the boys to tell us what's happening in the US Open. Third round gets underway shortly.
A couple of hours' time, yeah. It's been a big week in US sport. I know Roscoe's going to talk NBA finals and going to talk Stanley Cup finals shortly. But it is the third major of the year, the 119th US Open, at the very beautiful and iconic Pebble Beach, Monterey Peninsula, up there in Northern California. And it's a journeyman, really, world number 25, 35-year-old from Kansas, three times PGA winner Gary Woodland has a two-shot lead. He's 9-under par through two rounds, with rounds of 68 and 65. Two shots ahead of the Englishman, Justin Rose, who was a champion in the US Open 6 years ago at Merion. And he is one shot ahead of the South African, Louis Oosthuizen. So Justin Rose, 7-under par, Louis Oosthuizen, 6-under par. One shot back, tie for fourth, Aaron Wise, the American. But Rory McIlroy lurking ominously, four-time major winner. He's found some form in the early rounds. Can he go on and win a fifth major? That would be a big story, because it's been a long drought, 5 years since he won a Grand Slam event. But there are plenty of players in the mix heading into the weekend. Brooks Koepka, defending champion, chasing his third successive US Open. That would be an amazing story. One of the most unheralded sportsmen in American sport that's done amazing things is Brooks Koepka, and he keeps making a point about it in the media as well. He's at 4-under par. Expect a big round today from him on moving day Saturday. Just looking down the leaderboard, Graham McDowell, former winner, 3-under par. John Ram, the Spanish player, 3-under par also. Phil Mickelson, Jordan Spieth, 1-under par. And too far back, probably Tiger Woods at level par. But Pebble Beach is one of the iconic American golf courses. It needs a bit of wind. It's very linksy, close to the sea, but it had some wind on day two. Let's just listen to the conditions. Day two, Pebble Beach at Monterey Peninsula.
There is so much beauty here at Pebble Beach that catches your eye. But one of the great things that affects play here at this great links is often what you don't see, the wind. And that subtle shift in wind today really affected how things played
on the famed par 5 18th hole.
In round one, players teed off with a slight breeze at their back. With Friday's wind shift to the northwest, players lost the help on this sometimes daunting tee shot. Even though the hole was shortened in round two, it played longer, given the significant loss of driving distance for the field. The effect carried all the way to the green. Fewer players got their second shots close. Fewer players held the green when going for it in two. While Matt Kuchar's eagle was one of the highlights of the day.
This looks pretty good. Oh, how about it?
The number of double bogeys or worse on day two showed the increased peril on this risk-reward gem. A small shift in a light wind led to bigger numbers and higher scores here at 18. It once again goes to show that what you can't see at Pebble Beach is often the biggest obstacle.
That's a quick talk about Pebble Beach, host of the 119th US Open up there on the Monterey Peninsula. So it's Gary Woodland, the American, with a two-shot lead over Justin Rose. In fourth, a tie for fourth, is Rory McIlroy. He's really happy about how he's gone in the first 2 days. He's in contention, only four shots behind Gary Woodland. This is what Rory McIlroy, the man from Northern Ireland, had to say after his round yesterday.
I think physical, I always like it when my swing is in a place where I feel like I can hold it off through impact and I can still hit like a 1 yard draw, and that's sort of where it is right now. So that makes it very easy for me to control my flight. Something I've worked on for a while, and it's pretty comfortable at the minute. And then, yeah, mentally, I've been pretty good this week. I wasn't as disciplined as I needed to be on a couple of those holes in the back nine. But, you know, I bounced back from that, which was a really good sign. And, you know, look, it's not going to be easy over the weekend. You're going to make bogeys. You're going to make mistakes. It's going to happen. And if I can keep responding to those mistakes like I did today, you know, I'll be right there. Yeah, I would think so. You know, Carnoustie last year, I was right up there. You know, I played really solid golf and, you know, had a chance on Sunday. But, you know, coming off the back of a win last week and, you know, having another win this year as well, and just the consistency that I've shown, you know, it's the best I've felt about my game in a while, for sure, yeah.
That's Rory McIlroy, four shots behind, tied for fourth behind the American Gary Woodland after two rounds at the 119th US Open. One man probably too far back now to make a run at winning this event is Tiger Woods. He's at level par. He had a really disappointing couple of bogeys to finish his second round, and he held no punches, really, speaking about his round yesterday to the media.
A little hot right now. Obviously, I just signed my card about a minute ago, so a little time to cool down a little bit. A little bit quicker, still a little slow and bumpy. It's so important to be below the hole, because above the holes, they're a little tough to make. Yeah, I had a couple opportunities there. I missed a couple, but overall, I kept leaving myself above the hole. And unlike yesterday when I missed it, I missed in the correct spots below the hole. Today, I never had that many looks from below the hole. And the one I did have, I made it at 11. Yeah, right now, I'm still in the ballgame. There's, you know, there's so many guys with a chance to win. We got a long way to go, and you know, we'll see how it shapes up for tomorrow. You know, if the golf course will be a little bit faster, a little bit more springy than it was today, and the scores will continue to back up a little bit.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
July the 6th is a question that we're asking you at the moment, because Ross Crist is free. He's happy to travel. He's free to travel. He can get a visa. He can get himself over there. He wants to be part of your trip, because we are giving you, our lucky listeners, the opportunity to win not one but two tickets to go to see Australia against South Africa in Manchester as part of the ICC Cricket World Cup. We're going to fly you there. We're going to put you up there. It's all expenses paid, taken care of. At the venue itself, all you need to do is make sure you're available to travel on July the 6th, and make sure that you have a valid visa to travel as well. If you can tick those boxes, then all you have to do is then keep listening to Dubai Eye 103.8, keep listening to us right here on the show, and have your say into the competition. So, to a quick reminder of today's competition, we need you to identify this former Cricket World Cup winner.
Yes, that's the motto recently, and they've done a great job. You know, they've played like tigers, especially the younger boys. You know, they haven't been overawed by any situation, and if they play like tigers, I don't mind if they win or lose today.
So, if you know who that is, I need you to identify that former winning cricket captain, that former winning Cricket World Cup captain as well from years gone by. His name and your name, please, to 4001. You could be a winner, and you could be getting into the draw one step closer to being in Manchester on July the 6th on us to be part of the ICC Cricket World Cup. Ring your mates now. Tell them about this competition. This opportunity is closing at 6 p.m. this evening. So get on social media, get online, and let people know to get their answers in, because one name needs to be pulled out of the hat before 6 o'clock for your chance to be one step closer to making your way over to Manchester. Right, more details on that one to follow. Plenty more sport to talk about as well. We're going to dive into a big week of US sport. But there's a big couple of weeks and months of sport to look forward to across Europe. For most people, that is not, though, for a certain Chris Froome. He's had a shocker.
Chris Froome had been scouting the course. Here he is shortly before his crash. Being urged to ride safely. As he moved out of sight of the cameras, he took his hands off the handlebars again, but this time he was doing 60 kilometres per hour. He lost control in the gusty conditions and slammed into a wall.
Luckily, there was an ambulance parked very close to where he had his accident, so they were able to take care of him pretty quickly, which is very fortunate, and thanks to them.
He was airlifted to hospital in Saint-Étienne and has since been operated on. The worst of multiple injuries, a break at the top of his leg. Wout Poels was riding with Froome at the time, so witnessed exactly what happened.
Yeah, we were in the, after climbing a downhill, the wind took his front wheel and he went like really, really hard on the floor with, I think, we were going 60-65k an hour, and yeah, it was really bad.
Froome had tailored his training this year to give him the best possible chance of winning a record-equalling fifth Tour de France title. He was the bookies' favourite, so his accident is an early setback for Ineos, who have just taken over the team from Sky. Their only consolation, they still have last year's winner Geraint Thomas on their books. Froome himself faces a long layoff, his prospects depending on the skill of his surgeons and those who are tonight already planning his rehabilitation.
Now look, I know that injuries go hand in hand with sport, but there are injuries and then there are injuries. Let's have a little listen to this as well, or as we run through what he actually incurred during this smash. He's obviously lost consciousness as soon as he hit the wall. He sustained a fractured right femur, a broken hip, a fractured elbow, several fractured ribs, and it turns out today, also a fracture to his neck. At least 6 months away from cycling, 6 months in hospital under observation as well. Sorry, 6 weeks in hospital under observation. This is a serious blow for not just Chris Froome, but Ineos.
Yeah, it's a massive blow. You know, favourite going into the Tour. Strong team. It's a new team name, but what was Team Sky now has changed name, and he's their lead rider. I think arguably the leading cyclist in this format in the world has for the last couple of years. So. And you wonder, because I think he's getting on a little bit now, Chris Froome, and you wonder now, 34, which it's not young in cycling ages, but the wear and tear on your body that Tour takes after years, mental and physical, and you just think now, can he come back from that? It would be a massive challenge to come back at age 35, 36, and then win more multiple things, because it's a long time out, and those guys are such supreme athletes that to take sort of that amount of time off and then get your body back again, and then just to deal with the mental, you know, the crash situation. Yeah. You know, when you're going on those massive downhill sort of, you know, legs, you know, stages in the Tour de France, it's going to be really tough for him mentally to figure it out. So, yeah, you do feel for the guy, and let's hope he gets well and gets back on the bike.
Windy condition, yeah, back on the bike. Was there ever a better phrase to use in this one? Christo, windy conditions, obviously, I suppose, not what it makes it even worse, is very difficult to make this situation even worse. But the fact that he wasn't even competing at the time, this was a scouting run.
Yeah, these cyclists just move at the speed of light when they go by you. We've got to have them here out on the Dubai Tour and got to see them up close and personal. They're moving as fast as some of these cars, and it's just remarkable how fast that they can go. So certainly you're going to have some big, big injuries, and we see some of these huge pile-ups every year in the Tour de France where these guys just, one falls over, and it's just like dominoes down the mountain, and you just hope that everyone can get up with all of their ligaments and bones intact. But, yeah, you feel for the guy. Hopefully he gets back out there soon. Back
Tour
on
de
the
France,
bike.
Just around the corner. Obviously, we'll have coverage for you here on Dubai Eye 103.8, so make sure you stay tuned to that. We've got all the latest from the world of US sport in the second hour of the show, so stay tuned for that. Ross Christ has been working his socks off to bring us the fairy tale stories that have unfolded over the last couple of days. We'll bring you a succinct little wrap-up of that one. Before we do that one, I just want to play this one out to you. We've talked a lot of cricket already so far this show. We've got plenty of cricketing excellence and expertise around the table at the moment. All the commentators working at this year's ICC Cricket World Cup have been asked to select by the organisers their Cricket World Cup 11 of all time. I'm going to play you Bish's in just a few moments' time. For those out there that don't know who Bish is, the great Ian Bishop, one of the talisman of West Indian cricket for a long time?
Yeah, one of the sort of famed, feared fast bowlers there in the 90s, early 90s, and yeah, he was quick. I mean, they had some quick bowlers, but he was quick.
He was quick. I think he was a winner of the World Cup. He must have been part of that team, hasn't he, with Viv and that lot back then?
No, I think he hasn't won a World Cup. It was one World Cup after when he was part of the team.
Okay, he was certainly young coming in.
Yeah, he was with Courtney Walsh and Ambrose. I think they were the three duo who were the fast bowlers of the Windies in the 90s. Yeah.
Fast boys. Anyway, this was his selection. We'll hear Bish's selection, then we'll come back and ask the boys if there's any disagreements there.
Hello, my name is Ian Bishop, and I'm here to tell you who I have chosen in my GoDaddy 11. And I'm going to start right at the top with the opening batsman, and I've gone for a pair of openers from the same country. Their careers straddled each other. Sachin Tendulkar, who has been a high-volume scorer in one-day internationals across his career. I don't think I can look past him. And one of the guys who will be one of the modern greats, Rohit Sharma, a little bit younger than Tendulkar, one has to say, but another Mumbikan who I think will forge a really good partnership with Sachin. At three, my own former captain, Sir Vivian Richards. I think he was way ahead of his time when you look at his strike rate, his volume of scoring in an era when it was ill-conceived to do that. He would fit in to today's modern pyrotechnics quite seamlessly. And of course, Virat Kohli. I cannot look past him either. The way that he wins games, his records of scoring hundreds in chases, he's already, for me, a modern great of batting in 50-over cricket. My next guy is what I would call a 360 player, AB de Villiers of South Africa, retired from the international game now. I don't know that there are too many players around who have played the large sample size that AB has done, averaging 50 at the rate that he does it. I don't know that there can be any debate about his position. At number six, I want a finisher. Someone who is able to bat with the lower order, to bat those final overs and score quickly and efficiently, destroy bowling attacks in the death, Lance Klusener, the former South African all-rounder. Following him, Mahendra Singh Dhoni, wicketkeeper, averaging 50, great finisher, who I think if Klusener and Dhoni were batting at the end of a game, it would be a mouth-watering prospect. My spinner, Saqlain Mushtaq of Pakistan. I think that Saqlain's ratio of wickets per game, while others may have played more games and gotten more wickets, he was one of those early bowlers who was able to nip the ball either way off the pitch, bowled a great length, fantastic economy and average, so I've gone for Saqlain. And to follow the big guys, Wasim Akram, former Pakistan captain, a countryman of Saqlain, left arm, quick, swinging the ball when it's new, reverse swing at the end, outstanding all rounder as well. His batting would lend something to this team. And then I'm going for my twin towers, Joel Garner from one end. His sample size of games isn't as big as some, but I think in any era Joel played, he would have been economical and destructive at the same time. And then Glenn McGrath of Australia, another tall gentleman who had excellent control, could bowl in different phases of the game. So there we have it, my all-time one-day international 11. I know that many of you will have different players, and we can debate that for time to come over our lifetime.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.